If you grew up in the United States between the early 1970s and the late 2000s, you're probably familiar with Schoolhouse Rock. I know I am, I'm a big fan. And if you're familiar with Schoolhouse Rock, the series of educational cartoons, you might know their hit single, I'm Just a Bill, about how a bill becomes a law, at least at the federal level. Now, I won't sing that for you, one, because I'm not a very good singer, I don't want to subject you to that, but also because we don't have the rights to it. But take a minute to imagine it in your head. You remember it? Yeah, me too. Anyway, I only bring that up because understanding the legislative process can be difficult. It can be difficult on the federal level or the state level. Luckily, here at TCEA, we have our own legislative expert, and she's joining us as our guest speaker in the club this week to discuss the Texas legislature. Right now, they're in the middle of their biennial session, and they are sprinting to the finish line. And they're considering a number of important educational topics, topics that TCEA members have been paying attention to for a long time, like online assessment and broadband and more. These legislators are also considering the changes to education, the lessons learned from the coronavirus pandemic, and what learning might be like after. So, this week we welcome Jennifer back to the club to give us an update on the education issues making their way through the Texas legislature. We're covering all of those topics and more this week, and it all starts right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch. This week, Jennifer Berglund joins the club as our guest speaker to cover the Texas legislature and education topics relevant to educators around the world. So, without further ado, here is our talk with Jennifer. Your focus, among other things, is to keep an eye on the Texas legislature. Of course, a lot of educational policy gets made at that state level, so we pay a lot of attention every couple of years when the legislature comes back in session. Now, they've been in session since about January, but they will be ending their session soon as well. So we're kind of maybe at a somewhat crucial juncture in the time span of a legislative session where the topics that we at TCEA have been keeping an eye on start to actually become bills that may or may not be voted on soon. So for our listeners, we want to give a quick update on those topics, what they are, the kinds of things we're looking at when it comes to education and the technologies that make it happen. And you can give us kind of an update on the legislature and what their progress is on these topics.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to reflect on how many bills that have been filed that deal with educational technology. For those of us who have been in this fight for a long time or in this discussion and hoping that schools would move more into the digital world when it comes to instruction and using digital tools, almost every hearing in the education hearings, both in the House and the Senate, have multiple bills that deal with educational technology. So it's kind of an exciting time that we are very much a part of the conversation. And that's the reason why TCEA has, devoted a full-time staff member just to monitor what's going on here. So lots of things that they're dealing with. I'll just kind of run the laundry list and then narrow it down for you. There are bills that deal with broadband, student data privacy, the technology instructional materials allotment, computer science, cybersecurity training, virtual learning, online assessment, and school safety. And there are probably others that I didn't even mention, but that's just the list of the types of subjects that they are discussing that involve technology. The one big one that TCA has been in support of since 2013 has been broadband. We decided back then that that was the last major barrier that school districts had in order to make sure that they can move their instruction into the digital world. And at that time, we were concerned about schools having broadband. But one of our members, Joy from ARP ISD, back then said to me, "Jennifer, if you solve the problem of broadband at school, but you do not solve the problem at home, you've not solved the problem." And at the time, I was thinking, Joy, right now, I'm just trying to get broadband and fiber to school district. Don't give me that broad charge. But she's right. And the governor, the Speaker of the House, the Lieutenant Governor, they're all of them agree with Joy. And that is that it's very difficult for school teachers to really assign homework that they know half of their students are going to be able to have this vast, you know, broadband internet resources that they can have access to. And then they've got some kids where they're lucky if they have a book or two at home that deal with it because they do not have home broadband. So finally, because of the pandemic, this is a major focus, and everyone agrees that this is not a luxury, it is a necessity. And they are, several bills have been filed. There's one bill that is what we call an omnibus bill, and it looks at the problem holistically, and it has several provisions in it that they think will help solve this. And that is HB 5 and Senate Bill 5. They're very similar. They started out actually identical, and that as they went through the process, both chambers changed them a little bit. And eventually where it's going to go is I think HB 5 is going to be the vehicle, and it's already gone through the House. It came out of the Transportation Committee last week, and it's just got to be voted on in the Senate. And once it is, they'll have the same bill number, but there'll be different things in it. And so they will have to go to a conference committee. The big things that are in there is a broadband office, a state office that would be coordinating broadband, some mechanisms, some ways to make sure that we have really good data on mapping data. And then the third one is that we would have a state broadband plan. We're one of the few states in the union that do not have a broadband plan. And so this bill would require us to do that.
That's kind of surprising. You think about Texas being home to so many tech companies and entrepreneurs and having so many globally important urban areas. You know, it is a little surprising that plan isn't in place, but it sounds like this HB/SB5, as you say, it's an omnibus, so it's going to include a lot of things to address broadband, including, as you say, reporting. I know they always like to have a reporting mechanism, so when they come back in another 2 years, they can review and see what they want to do now. Thinking about that, it's not hard to see that the last three semesters of schooling made it apparent that there was a need for high-speed internet access. Is it your understanding that this is kind of where this is coming from, that legislators started to see the lessons learned during the coronavirus pandemic and how they can set up more permanent infrastructure?
Yeah, because, you know, when they found that school districts were delivering packets to children's homes, they were using their bus drivers literally to deliver packets, or in some situations they were taking a bus in a certain part of the community and setting up a hotspot. And you know, you mentioned that we have urban centers. It's important that we know that this is not just a rural problem but an urban problem. In some large, very large cities, because maybe it's not a wealthy area, some providers haven't even put broadband in those areas. But then also, it's expensive. You know, you and I, it's a necessity for us, so we're going to figure out a way to do it. But for some, if you're trying to figure out how to put food on your table or get broadband to your kids' iPads that have been delivered from the school, you're going to get food on the table. So this is a rural issue where maybe some homes don't have access to it, but in urban areas, it might be a financial issue. Well, both, it's financial for both of them. So, yes. But, you know, what's interesting is they found that it's not just for schools. It's also telemedicine and people working from home. In fact, a lot of teachers didn't have the ability to do remote learning from their home because of broadband. So it was kind of just everything. You know, education was a big piece of it, but I think people realize that this is an economic driver for the state and we need to fix this.
And so what else is moving through the ledge? Obviously, broadband is something we've been sounding the alarm on for a while. What else are we looking at? And are those issues also getting a fresh look from our legislators?
There are several. Well, there were about 9 or 10 bills that were filed that dealt with remote learning or virtual learning. And there are two that are, looks like they're moving, that are going to probably come into, I wouldn't call it in a collision because that sounds bad, but conflating, taking pieces from both bills and eventually coming up with one maybe is a better way of saying it.
Convergence, a synthesis. We'll call it a synthesis. That sounds really positive.
There you go. That's right. But one of the things that I started getting phone calls about this time last year from tech directors from some pretty large school districts that were concerned that in the state of Texas, they did not have the ability without some legislation to deliver remote learning, virtual learning, distance learning, whatever you want to call it, to their own students full time. The commissioner waived some rules because he had the ability to do that because of the pandemic. But once those waivers are gone, school districts right now don't have the ability to do that. And so they call, I've started fielding calls, Jennifer, we need something that will give us the ability to provide online learning, full-time online learning for some of our students, either within our borders or even that give us the ability to deliver it to students outside of our borders. But primarily, they want to make sure they can do it to their students. The reason why is because, A, they figured that some of their parents still wouldn't be comfortable sending their kids back. B, some of the parents discovered that they liked it and that their children liked it. Now, the vast majority did not, but some parents found that they kind of liked the ability of homeschooling with the support of the school district and the state. And so they were worried that if they don't have the ability to do that, their students that want that option will go to one of there's 7 right now full-time virtual options in the state. That without going into a lot of historical background, they were grandfathered in and they have the ability to provide online learning. Houston ISD is one of them. Huntsville ISD is one of them. And so they've set up a shop. And so, you know, students, for instance, in Austin ISD, if they want a full-time option, they can go to one of those. And so both HB 1468 and Senate Bill 27 do provide districts with the option to provide online learning for their students. Senate Bill 27 allows school districts to provide it to, if a district wants to provide it to students who are not within their boundaries. One of the problems that we have, however, with HB 1468 is it just carves out the term synchronous learning, and it does not give districts the ability to do asynchronous learning. And we have a fundamental strong opinion about that, because that is what remote learning is asynchronous, and it very much involves that. We believe the authors heard us on that, and we think that he's willing to make some changes as the bill goes through. It was actually passed out of the House today, so it is now going to be on its way to the Senate. Senate Bill 27 is one of those omnibus bills. It's deals with a lot of things dealing with virtual learning. And we think that it's finally in a pretty good spot where we think we can support it. And it's being heard on the Senate floor today. So we'll see where it's going. And again, I have a feeling these bills are somehow going to end up being won. We'll see which parts of each of the bill make it in the final version. But hopefully we'll have something, because they're pretty large school districts. Frisco ISD just tweeted out last week that they were creating a virtual school for kids at grades 3 through 12. If legislation's passed, it allows them to do it. Another school district, Bryan ISD, I saw on Facebook, is creating they are also in the process of doing that, and they were seeking input from their community about whether or not this is something they should do. And so this is something that some of the school districts, I know Round Rock ISD is very interested in doing this as well. So hopefully they'll be given some legislative rules around that and it give them a path forward to be able to do that.
And this, regarding these virtual learning bills and potential policies, this isn't so much a reaction to, I mean, it's certainly, I imagine, a reaction to the pandemic, but this isn't so much planning for if everyone has to leave the building for a long amount of time again in the future. Obviously, we want that option. We want to be able to implement what we need a little bit maybe faster or more readily than we did during the pandemic at the beginning. But this is also a question of you know, individual need, right? There may be students with disabilities or transportation issues, families with childcare issues, living situations that make it difficult to physically get to school for a while. And it makes sense then that there could be an online option. Is that kind of more of the sense that you get from legislators of what they're putting into this?
Yeah, thank you for clarifying this. This is what we've been living through is what we would probably call pandemic online learning and everyone trying to figure it out on their own, whereas some school districts did a better job because they probably were a little further ahead. But no, we're looking at these school districts are wanting to do something going forward at a time where there is no pandemic. So it's definitely a new way they want to deliver instruction to their community.
And districts and administrators must be seeing a need within their communities. I mean, you mentioned a lot of sort of mid-size Texas cities, Frisco, Round Rock, that are pretty big communities and have big school districts. So this must be something that the districts are hearing from their community and from their parents and guardians. And teachers, for that matter.
Yeah, and I'm not speaking for them right now, except anecdotally. I know that school districts have been doing online surveys throughout this whole pandemic and getting a sense of where their parents are on sending their kids back. So I have a feeling those that are wanting to do this have gotten some survey data that indicates they've got a need that they want to fill. And quite frankly, they feel like they're ready to do that. And I think, quite frankly, they're worried that if they don't do it, they will lose those parents and those students, and they will be going to one of the other full-time options.
And as you say, as we kind of started, you know, the foundation of that is not just broadband, high speed internet in schools then, but for this virtual learning to build a kind of permanent infrastructure for those who need or want it, then kind of builds on that foundation. It sort of requires that that broadband access, right?
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting though. I mentioned the asynchronous. One of the reasons why we pulled together some of our members after that bill was heard in committee, I wanted some of our members to talk to me about synchronous and asynchronous. And typically when virtual learning experts are talking, synchronous and asynchronous don't rise to the level of whether or not it should be allowed or not be allowed. They're just assumed. I mean, you know, you just use both of those. But one of our members from a very small rural school said, if he doesn't allow asynchronous, my school district won't be able to do remote learning because we do have some students that do not have broadband and we do deliver packets to them. And it reminded me, you're too young to remember this, but correspondence courses. I took a correspondence course back in the day where that was distance learning. And so it's similar to that kind of a process. So anyway, that's a little side note.
It makes perfect sense though. And so thinking about the other structural things that we'll need going forward, how do the other issues we're looking at relate to all this? Or we can make the relationship connections as we go, but what else are we looking at?
Well, the other big one that we're very interested in is online assessment. Last session, the legislature passed a pretty big assessment bill. And one of the things that they put in that bill is that they wanted TEA to do a study on what it would take for the state to move to online assessment so that almost every assessment and every child would be taking the assessment online. There are some caveats to that, so it's not 100%, but about 99.5% of the tests. So the legislature did a study. They hired Texas A&M University to do that. And because of COVID, school districts, with the help of federal CARES dollars and the state directing those dollars towards buying devices, we pretty much closed the device gap, is how the commissioner calls it. The state spent almost $1 billion on devices and hotspots so that children would have a device. So pretty much that's no longer a concern. The broadband also, because of a lot of work that we've done at the school level with Education Superhighway, which came to that symposium that we had back in 2013, and we've had a great relationship with them. The state pretty much has closed most of the broadband gap to school districts. They did identify some school districts where that was not the case. And so in some legislation, SB 1171 and HB 3261, one's a House bill, one's a Senate bill again. And in those bills, they have created a grant with some grant funding for those school districts that need what the commissioner is calling the fill in the gap, where they need to be able to actually lay some fiber to some of those school districts and campuses. And then they've also identified some places in the TIMA for school districts to use to pay for devices and broadband and so forth going forward. And that piece of legislation would then also give the Texas Education Agency the permission to move forward with online assessments by the year 22-23, so another school year. And we're very supportive of that, largely because we think it's in line with the long-range plan for technology. We're one of the few states that doesn't do all of our assessments online. There's lots of advantages of being able to take the test online. And so we're hoping that that's another one of the pieces of legislation. You know, if every kid has a device so they can do assessments, that also means every kid has a device and broadband to do the kinds of amazing things that we know teachers can do with the use of technology in their classrooms. So,
right. And yeah, it works both ways, right? Because educators and districts are required to assess their students in order to justify, you know, what they're doing and continue doing it. At the same time, it undergirds the whole thing and helps education that way. And just to clarify, when we're talking about assessment, we're talking about state level testing. In Texas here, we're talking about the STAR tests. Is there anything else included in that? We're not talking about stuff the College Board does or other things like that?
No, we're mainly talking about the state required assessments. You know, you mentioned College Board tests. The state does pay for a lot of those tests that are given for juniors, I believe. But I don't know that there, it wouldn't be, this would not require those to be online. I'm not saying they might not start doing them online, but it would not require that. Only the state required assessments.
And the online piece of this, so, I mean, obviously it means you, if you're a student, you're unlikely to have to fill out a Scantron like we used to and then have somebody slotted in a machine like a ballot, you know. Does that mean, because right now a lot of students go to a testing center and take the assessment on a computer at the testing center. Would it be that kind of a setup?
No, that's why every kid having a device would be very helpful. It's interesting. I've been reading, because we've been doing some online testing in the state for a while, but it's right. just not full scale. And I've been reading how some of the school districts handle this. Some of them ask the students to bring their devices to school maybe a week before or maybe a couple of days before, and they charge them because kids are notorious for forgetting to charge their computers, and they don't want, you know, so basically they're saying, bring them in to us a day or two, make sure that we'll make sure they're in perfect order so that when you take your test, you've got everything you need. And some school districts that may, you know, they have computers on carts that they wheel into a room, and they would do it that way. So they wouldn't probably be going to a center. The computers would be coming to them, or they already have a device that's been checked out to them.
Right. And the testing security aspect of it happens within whatever software or programming that's happening to administer the test.
Yeah. The state, like I said, we've been doing this for a while, and the state and these companies have figured out a way to lock kids out so that they can't go to the internet and those kind of things. So yeah, those kids are really, really smart, and we've taught them how to go Google stuff, but we don't want them to Google stuff when they're actually taking a test. But so the testing companies have come up with ways to try to prevent that kind of thing.
Right. The finding the answer skill that these students have is a very good one, but it is not the one we are assessing on a test.
Exactly. Very good way of putting that.
You know, hey, I try to spin things a positive way. So what else are we looking at? What else is moving through?
The other thing that we really got a lot of input from our members, particularly tech directors, deal with student data privacy. A couple of years ago in 2017, we really were, we worked with a Representative Van Dever on a student data privacy bill. Basically, it was all, everything was directed towards the tech companies that deal primarily, have educational products that they deal with. And it basically said what they can and can't do with that data, and they can't profile and all of this other stuff. But the one thing that they really didn't address in that bill was the data sharing agreement. And that has been a problem for districts because these companies, as you can imagine, they have a data sharing agreement, and oftentimes they're very reluctant to make any changes because you can understand there's over 1,000 school districts, and they have built their product around this data sharing, you know, agreement, a lot of aspects of it. And so they're reluctant to make the changes, but that is, you know, unless you're a big, large school district and you've got a big contract. So this bill, HB 363, that just passed the House today, it requires if a product has been approved or adopted by the state, then the company must agree to a state data sharing agreement so that you have a model data sharing agreement. And a data sharing agreement just is a It's like a contract. This is what you do with our data. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. If the contract ends, you must destroy the data within X number of days, et cetera. So it's just, you know, what are you going to do with our data? What you can do, what you can't do. And so we're very supportive of that. But it requires that these companies use a unique identifier, which is a number. It's saying that they must use the Texas Student Data System, I think, number. We call it TSDS. And it's basically, years ago, we quit using Social Security to identify kids. We quit using their Social Security number. And they came up, and so every district came up with their own unique identifier. And then finally the state said, no, we're going to have one unique identifier, and it stays with that kid regardless of where they go. And they did it also for employees, so that even if the employee, a teacher, goes from one district to another, they still have a unique identifier. And that they're supposed to use that unique identifier for masking data. And so, and then they also, in that bill, the state basically gets to define what data the district will share with the company. One of the concerns has been that a lot of times companies ask for data that they really don't need for the functionality of their program. They're using it a lot of times to use for their testing. They're probably wanting some demographic data that they don't really need for the functionality, but they're using it for their own testing purposes to make their product better. And it's really concerned school districts that they're asking for data that maybe they don't need. And, you know, school districts, it's their data. On one hand, I'm going to say, you know, some of them have been saying, well, these companies are requiring school districts to give them data they do not need. No, school districts can always say, no, you're not getting this data. But a lot of times, who buys the product and who implements it technically are two different groups, and they may not always talk to each other. So, you know, the tech people get the list of data that they're supposed to give to the company, and they're just assuming that the curriculum people have already agreed to that. That's Jennifer's assessment of how I think sometimes this goes awry. But this bill would say, the state would say, no, this is the data you're going to give. Now, we worked on this because we were concerned two of these provisions. We know that school districts are going to be the ones that are going to be in charge of implementing and executing the contract. So some school districts have data sharing agreements and may want to include some of those things in the data sharing agreement that they sign with that company. And so we got the member to accept a couple of changes to the bill. And one of them is a school district can change the data sharing agreement if the company agrees to. So there's more local control. Another thing that we got to change is that there are sometimes school districts contract with a company to actually reprogram something to collect some data on their students that they've paid extra for. This happens a lot with student information systems. And so we wanted to make sure that school districts, again, have, and it's their data, and they have the ability to share some of data that the state did not stipulate as allowable. So they, again, have local control. They can go, they can say, no, yes, this is a data where we can share by the state, but it's our data and it's our relationship with this company. We're going to also give them this data. So that's also in the bill. So that local control is what we were after.
Yeah, and I can see how, you know, if I'm a smaller district and I don't want to run up those billable hours with the lawyers to write a new contract every time I have to implement something, right, which I probably feel like I'm having to implement a lot of new things these days. But if I'm a bigger district and we've got them on retainer and we've already got the budget line item,
exactly,
to pay the lawyers, we can get the contract we want to negotiate. But you don't have to. It's not all on the district to figure that out every time, I guess.
Right, exactly. And the only other bill, only other area is that directly is computer science. We're monitoring HB 3298. It's filed by Representative Allison from the San Antonio area. And it would require the state to create a strategic planning committee that would help create the environment for more students to take computer science at the high school. But recognizing that this is a K-12 problem, recognizing that we need to begin to foster teaching kids computational thinking skills at an earlier age, so that, because some kids don't even know they have a technical ability until it may be too late. And so fostering that interest in those kind of you know, subjects early is important. And so that's one, a similar bill passed last session, but TEA wasn't able to implement it because of COVID, and there was a due date for a report, and that date has come and gone. So we're just trying to get it passed again. It also would, he's going to add some language when it gets to the House floor that would create a grant to also help train teachers so that they can pass the computer science certification. That's one of the big barriers of school districts offering computer science at the high school level. They just don't have teachers that can do it. So I think I've given you the highlights. There's a lot of other bills that we're looking at, but those are the main things that we're really focusing on right now.
Sounds like everybody's staying busy in Austin.
Yeah, and what we haven't even talked about where we're at in the session. We have about four and a half weeks before the session's over. It ends the last Sunday of May. And if a bill doesn't get passed both chambers in identical form by midnight of that night, it's dead. And so, you know, we are really to the point where the bills are kind of crossing over, meaning the Senate's now beginning to hear House bills and the House is beginning to hear Senate bills, and the bills are going to get more, the path is narrowing for them to be able to get passed. So these are the main bills that we're hoping that we'll get there.
Well, sounds like crunch time, so I won't take up any much more of your time. If I'm out there listening, I'm here in Texas, or I'm out of Texas, and I want to be thinking about these issues in my state or my country, any tips, any places to direct people?
Well, if you're in Texas, I highly encourage you to go to the Texas Legislature online. It is a free website, and almost every, and no matter where you're at, you have one of these types of websites. I have just recently, I saw someone compare we call it the TLO. I've had somebody compare ours to other states, and they really do say ours is really pretty good. It's very easy to find bills. You can create in fact, you can go to our website and go under blogs and search for Texas Legislature Online. I have a whole blog about how to create an account there, so you can track bills. You can go to this site and click on links to watch the hearings, and they're really pretty fascinating. I will just tell you, if you just want to find out what are the concerns of average day Americans, listen to the hearings. I cry. I get angry. You just hear all of the things that people are concerned about. And it's pretty fascinating just to listen to the different hearings. Just pop into a couple. You'll probably get hooked pretty quickly. It's very good reality TV. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I've watched a few in my time. And they tend to be interesting. They tend to give you a lot of insight on what the people who vote on these things are thinking as well. And of course, if you go into Texas Legislature Online, start digging around, and you're thinking, I'm not sure what this means, you can always call. You know, you could always reach out to the author of the bill and call their office and say, I don't understand what this means, because they all work for us after all. So it's a good way to, paying attention can get you kind of automatically engaged.
Well, that's another good thing. Call your legislator. call your legislator's office. You're a constituent, and so they want to hear from you. They're going to want to hear from you more than they're going to want to hear from me. So if you find a bill you really like, you don't have to be an expert on it. All you have to do is call up, say, "Hi, my name is," and then give them your name. "I am a constituent. I live in this district, and I just hope that please pass along to your boss that I hope he will vote for or against certain bills." And literally they have someone there that's all they do is they write down, "We've gotten 5 people that have called and they want you to vote for this bill. We've got 6 people that have called and want you to vote against it." And they literally give that information to the legislators. And sometimes that makes a difference. They are too busy to people are worried that they're going to start asking me questions that I'm not going to know the answers. They're too worried. They're too busy to do that. But even if they do and you don't know the answer, just say, "I'm sorry, I don't know the answer, but I'll get back to you." Mm-hmm. But yes, they work for you and you are the expert in the things that you're concerned about. So don't hesitate to contact their office. And if it's during the session, contact their office at the Capitol. If it's outside the session, then contact their office in the district.
Yep. And that's all online. You can find all that info.
It's all online. You can go to the Texas Legislature online. You can find all that information.
And as you say, they're dealing probably with an avalanche of potential legislation here. And I imagine on a lot of things, they don't get a lot of feedback directly from constituents. So if you do reach out, you might be one of the louder voices on a certain topic.
I can guarantee you that's correct, unless it's a very confrontational bill, and none of these are. So certainly I would highly encourage our listeners, if they're interested in these things, to check it out. And I think also you're going to put in the notes a webpage that I've created with a bill analysis that I have done on the major bills, and it has links to all of this stuff as well.
And as Jennifer mentioned, your homework, check out the links she discussed. Those are down in the description, the show notes for this episode. And I know you're always looking for ways to get extra credit. So don't forget to keep up with the latest, whether it's policy or just good ideas in teaching, by following TCEA on social media. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast, recommend it to your friends. And if you want to go the extra mile, you elementary educators, make sure you check out our elementary technology conference coming up online this summer. There's still time to register, and that means there's still time to get in on this fun learning event where you won't have to go through all the sessions to figure out which ones are right for you. They're all going to be right for you if you're an elementary educator. And you can check out those sessions on the website right now. Go take a look at elementary.tcea.org. But that's enough work to give you between now and our next meeting. So we'll take a break until that next meeting. But until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.